So welcome. I hope you're all doing well today. I'm excited for our training call today. It's all about accountability. A couple of pieces before we jump in. The first is, I know I said this a couple of weeks ago, but I wanted to remind everyone, because I think it's good to have reminders. There's a lot of material that we're learning. I want to acknowledge that. And at the same time, I also want to remind you that everything that we're learning in the second half of Sacred Depths is a deepening. It's not that every week we're throwing lots of new techniques out. Some of the weeks we are learning new techniques, but for example, this week, we're not learning a new technique about accountability. We're just deepening everything that we've already learned and kind of like expanding into that area. So it's a lot, not a lot. And I just say it to kind of maybe help you a little bit not get so overwhelmed with the material. Don't think of it as a completely new topic. Think of it as we're just expanding on everything that we're already learning. Make sense? Okay, great. The other thing I wanted to make sure that I mentioned, and I'm going to be sending emails out about this as well, but a couple of you have already started saying, oh my gosh, there's only 2 months left. What if we want to continue afterwards? And a couple of you are here who have already done Sacred Depths in the past. You're here and are continuing, and I'm happy that you're here. But I'm so happy that some of you have already started to ask about what's next. For some of you, it will be aligned to continue our work together. And I've got two different ways that we can do that. And so on March 27th, let me see at what time. March 27th at noon Eastern. And again, I'll be sending emails out about this. We'll have a call and it'll be recorded if you can't be there, but I highly recommend being there so that you can also ask questions and all of that. And I'll share with you kind of all the different possibilities for moving forward and special rates just for you. That's March 27th at noon. Okay, so today we're looking at creating accountability. And I always like to say, I say the same thing before our session on systems, which we did a few months ago, as I always say before accountability, at the outset, accountability is kind of not sexy, but really it's very, very, very sexy. I promise you. So what is accountability? For the sake of our call today, we're going to define it as follows: taking action or following through on the inner and outer tasks that you've committed to. Taking action or following through on the inner and the outer tasks that you've committed to. And Lisa, I'm seeing your question in the chat. It's 12 noon Eastern. Okay, so taking action sounds easy enough, right? But we know not necessarily. And we all know that kind of some of it has to do with fears and limiting thought patterns, right? So we've already learned a lot of tools to support clients with accountability, looking at the wheel of self-sabotage, looking at perfection, right? All of those are tools, techniques, skills that can help with accountability. But there's more for us to kind of understand and take a look at to understand the nature of what all of this is. So in order to do that, let's even just take a step back and take a look at what is a coach's role when it comes to a client being accountable to what they've committed to. So the way that I really see it is that a coach's role is to support your client to be accountable and also to what they've committed to, and also to learn how to become more accountable in general. That's one of the, not for everyone. If you're kind of like a get it done person, maybe you don't need to just build that muscle in general, but for most human beings, it's a muscle that is important to build. And our role as coaches, as practitioners, is not just to support a client to be accountable to the specific goal that they're working on, but to support them to learn more about themselves and their patterns when it comes to accountability and to build that muscle. Now, that being said, what I'm going to say next is the most important thing that I'm going to say today. We cannot make our clients do anything. Period. We cannot make our clients do anything. It doesn't matter how masterful we are, how magical we are, how many tools we've got in our toolbox. Our client has to be ready and has to want it. We can't make anyone do anything. And I share this with clients as early on as in sales calls already, right? That I'm not going to have a magic pill to make them do anything or for them to be accountable. And just to tell you, in case that you've had clients in the past who ultimately were not accountable to their commitments, and if you've been judging yourself about that, you know, I just want to share with you, I have had a couple of clients over the years who just did not take action. We looked at every fear, every shadow, every limiting belief, every habit, everything. And even though at the time I may have been thinking that there's something I'm not doing right, or right enough, looking back, I know that it's not about that. I can see that for those clients in their hearts, they either didn't really want the goal or it just wasn't the right time for them. That being said, with those clients, the work that we did together was still, by and large, they would call it a success and valuable in their eyes, because even though they didn't ultimately take the big actions in that time period of our coaching that they thought that they would, they still shifted and grew and transformed and got closer to being ready or got closer to being more clear on what it is they really wanted. They came to know and understand themselves better than they had before, to accept more of themselves and their process. And so with some clients, that is the best that we can do together with them. And that is still incredibly valuable. I'll also share that I've had my fair share of clients who have been accountable to the actions and to taking the action and have made beautiful progress towards their goals, but slowly, not in the time or the pacing that they had wanted when we started the work together, right? Like, real talk here, you know what I mean? It's just, this is how it is. And so why did it take slower? Because some of their patterns had been with them since childhood. Some of their fears had been with them since childhood. And it took time for us to work on it and work through it. Or maybe because a major event happened in their life when we were working together. Or maybe because for that season in their life, they needed a different kind of pacing, or just in general for who they are, they needed a different kind of pacing with action taking. Going slower isn't a failure. I'm going to say that again, because I know we all know this intellectually, but then we forget it in our hearts and in our bodies, right? Going slower isn't a failure. It's called how real change happens for many people. So I want you all to throw away the notion right now that as a practitioner, you're some kind of godlike figure that can will your clients to do things and to do them at a certain pace, right? That's just myth of perfection. And it doesn't serve. Of course, we want to use all of our tools to co-create accountability. We want to leave no stone unturned. We want to be masterful. You know, we want to do everything that we can, but it ultimately isn't up to us. It's not. You've heard me kind of use this analogy of the river before, but I'm going to share it again. I always like to say that as practitioners, we can tell our clients about the river. We can tell them the name of the river. We can give them directions to get to the river. We can walk with them through the woods to get to the river. We can even hold their hands as they cross the river, but we cannot put our clients on our backs and carry them across the river. All right, let me pause there. What's resonating for you? What's clicking? What's feeling important so far? You know what I'm sharing is obvious, not obvious, right? Like, but it's so important. What's clicking for you? What's feeling important? Deva.
I think it's just important for me to know as well that a lot of times I want things to go faster and want to be farther along, and just the slowness, and that it's not always the right time. And then to be able to model that for clients as well, that, you know, you can have all the tools and to be gentle with the pacing and to give them the space, and that their responsibility is to use the tools and go as quickly or slowly as feels comfortable, and to really give them that allowance to change the pacing when they need to, and to that it's not a failure, that it's just a different rhythm, and we're so conditioned to go fast and get a lot done, and sometimes it's just not the most helpful thing.
Yes, that is absolutely, you know, yes to that. And we'll look more also at this idea of pacing. I mean, we've already looked at it in lots of different ways in the program, but when we get to also embracing the mystery too, it's a piece there. But I love this idea that you're talking about in terms of allowing client, you know, the moment that we as practitioners, we've already spoken so much about not being attached to outcome. And one of the ways that we can get attached to outcome as practitioners is thinking it has to happen in X amount of time. Sometimes it does, which is great, but in many times we have to allow it to unfold for our clients. Thank you. Jessica, did you have your hand up? I saw it up and then down.
Yes. And is it okay if I share?
Yeah, go ahead.
I love this conversation because I've often actually struggled a lot with this like concept of the taking action. And what I love about what you're sharing is bringing the awareness that just like was just previously shared, is that everyone has their own timing, and we've been developed in this kind of, I'll say the masculine or patriarchal or expert, like get things done. And there's such a big difference between like saying my husband and me, and I work a lot with human design. So I've researched for different things besides with human design, as well as other things that really can help understand our client's pace so that we actually know. For example, my husband can get like everything done in like so quick, and for me it may take me a week to do what he does, but I do it differently. And if I was to compare myself in that way, I would feel like not good enough, or you know what you know, just like I'm not getting things take longer for me. And it took me a long time just to accept that, and also to honor it for myself. And I love this idea that actually we can identify now how long things take in a certain way. There's some tests that people can take to identify what their natural pacing is. Now, along with that, the other thing though is that sometimes because I've had this challenge in not understanding myself, and I've had taken a lot of years trying to uncover this, is now I'm in a place where it's like, I need to understand how much I can get done. And it is the divine timing of it all, but it is also like my conditioning of like being slower, and maybe I can pace that up too.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing all of that. And, you know, that what you're sharing and what Deva was sharing reminds me of, you know, we looked back at our strategizing module. Remember, we looked at different types of natural rhythms, and supporting our clients to be aware, are you a marathoner? Are you a sprinter? Are you a tipping pointer? It sounds like, Vesica, you've got like a whole test with different that can assess all of that too, which sounds amazing, right? But the more that we can support our clients to know what their natural pacing is, or natural pacing is at any given moment in time, the more they can work with that and use it to their advantage and have less shame and much more self-acceptance and enjoyment of the process. So thank you. Lisa's saying in the chat, what's popping for you is it's not your responsibility. I'm glad you put that in there, Lisa. I'm going to underscore that again. It's so important. Okay, so let's keep on going with this, and want to kind of go a little deeper into some energetic pieces and kind of like mindset perspective pieces that are helpful for us as practitioners when it comes to supporting our clients to be accountable. And some of us have to watch for this, that we don't do this inadvertently. Don't make your clients' results or action taking about you. So on an energetic level, right, watch to make sure that you're not making their results or if they're taking action or not action about you and your value and how well of a job you've done. And that's the same, by the way, for their celebrations and all that they create. And if they are taking a lot of actions, right? It's not about you. You can celebrate and celebrate that the work that you're holding with them has yielded great results, but it's never about you on either side. The moment we make it about us with the celebrations, we inevitably also then have to make it about us when results don't happen too, right? Or action doesn't happen. So we want to really watch for that and how we're approaching that. And the other piece, don't make your clients taking action or creating results for you. Make sure you're not setting up an unspoken situation where they're doing it for you. So we don't want to make it about us, and we don't want to make it for us. Sometimes when parents are unaware, they do one or both of these things with their children. My child's accomplishments or lack of accomplishment is a reflection on me, right? Or, you know, be nice to other kids, do it for me, right? Or study for your test for me, right? And for people that have grown up in environments where parents have made action taking or, you know, good habits or results about them or for them, they will sense this a mile away if it's coming from their practitioner. And it can really trigger them to rebel and then not take action or take the action, but take it from a misaligned place. Does that make sense so far? What I'm saying? And it's subtle, right? Like, because obviously we all know we're not making it about us or for us, but are we bringing, we really want to check that we're not bringing that, any of that, any hint of that to the client container. Another piece, just to like continue to expand on this idea, some clients can get triggered around accountability in general, because at some point in their lives, they were shamed for not being accountable, either by parents or teachers, employers, etc. In those cases, those clients have likely experienced a power over accountability structure, a power over accountability structure. Or a punitive accountability structure, which is also a power over. So I want to suggest that we think about our jobs is not only to support our clients to be accountable to themselves, not to us, right? They're not accountable to us, to be accountable to themselves and their goals. But as we do that, to support them to change internal accountability structures that they have from power over to empowered together. And that's what helps them build ownership of their own commitments. So to go from power over to empowered or power together. And then that's what helps them build ownership to their own commitments. So I feel like this ties into what Nikki is asking in the chat. How do you handle it when the client wants, is it when the client wants to do it for you or when the client wants you to do it for them? I just want to make sure I'm getting that right.
No. So one of my clients, you know, we agree like the takeaways and the experiments, et cetera, that she will want to do in a week or a fortnight or a month, whatever, you know, depending on what it is. And then it's very much, she goes to the, I will do this for you, to which my response has always been, but this is not for me or about me. This is your journey and you're doing beautiful work for you.
Yes, so yes, yes.
Look at how far you've come because of all these things you've done for you.
Yeah. Okay. Now I understand your question. So, so first of all, that's great that you're reflecting that. And if the client still doesn't get it, then it could be really valuable to go into an exploration of where they got this idea that they're doing it for another person, and to lightly ask, you know, when you were growing up and you, or in your 20s or whatever, that, you know, at certain points in your life, when you were taking actions towards the goals, towards goals, who were you doing it for? Or when was a time when you were younger where you felt like you were doing something for your parents, like practicing piano or doing your home? You didn't just start to open up for them this understanding of where they got this idea from, that they so want to do it for you, practitioner. And then start to look at how that actually maybe wasn't so helpful for them, even if it helped them get the thing done. To then maybe ask some questions around, you know, how did it feel to do it for someone else versus to do it for you, and kind of get into some of those awarenesses. How does that sound?
Yeah. And I think focusing on for her, because it actually creates quite a traumatic spiral, focusing on how do you feel having done all these things for you in recent months is quite important.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Great question. Good. So Vesica saying in the chat that all of this reminds you of parent manipulation, teacher manipulation, religious programming. Yes, looking for validation from outside of self. Absolutely. And then that's where a lot of those power over accountability structures come from, right? So if we come back to this idea that we're supporting our clients in the goals that we're helping them with, and then in general, to build ownership for themselves, I want to invite everyone to take a moment right now and define that term for yourself. What, when I say build ownership to goals, to commitments, what does that mean to you? Building ownership, having ownership. And I'd love to hear some more shares, either your definition of ownership or what is clicking for you around this conversation of not making it about you, not making it for you, and being conscious that there's not a power over accountability structure being set up. It's so such an important topic. Vesica's saying self-sovereignty is ownership. Nice. Angie is saying really owning how you get from point A to B. It may not be how others do it. It may not be best practice. I love that. Yes, but doing it in a way that works for you. Nice. Nicole is saying, my ownership is I make agreements with myself and how I respond to them matters. I love that, responding to agreements. Nice. Anyone want to share voice to voice what this is, what's kind of popping for you here, what's starting to click? Michelle is saying claiming all results and consequences as a definition for ownership. Yes, love that. Love to hear a voice or two on this. What's feeling important here? Vesica.
I I'm like a little hesitant to say this because it brings up a lot for me, and that in ownership, or I like the word sovereignty, and I also like the aligned integrity, is that this awareness that everything, I have this thing that it may not be in my life and maybe my lineage, it might not be my fault that certain things happened in my family or my lineage or on planet Earth, but it is my responsibility to do my part. And where I'm like with accountability and what this really means, I'm really working with this because it's like I know I have some work around accountability around the things that are my part that sometimes I can get like lazy about or not really quite take the action I know I'm meant to take. And I'm really looking at that. And what I really feel is that there's this place in me that knows that this is a part of my reason for being on planet Earth. It's my piece to do. It's the gifts that I have. And it feels like if I'm accountable, it's like it's being devoted. It's a devotion to the aligned actions that I'm here to take on this planet for me to do and fulfill my role and to be an example for that for others without attachment to anyone else doing anything other than me just being in alignment.
Yes. I love that. That's so beautiful. And I love this concept of devotion too. One of the things that I wanted to mention, just is important to be aware of for people when it comes to accountability, is that some clients are even going to be, their feathers will get ruffled even by the term accountability. It can carry so much with it, particularly if there's been trouble with accountability. And so I always like, with some clients, it's good to use other terms. And I love this idea of devotion to a goal or being devoted to taking actions. So thank you. It's great. Lisa.
Oh, Vesica, I love that bit about devotion. I'm going to come in on that in a moment. But my first response was about the client owning it to say things like, do it for yourself and not for anyone else. It's like, these are your choices and it's your life to live how you want to live your life. So for me, that felt like a nice way of seeing it. And then I got a bit beyond that, and in a sense, and with Vesica's devotion, it was like, oh, but we don't just do it. To me, it's like co-creation with the universe. You know, it's not just me, the doer. It's like tuning in and what's the aligned action and when does it feel right to take it?
Yes.
Because otherwise I think it's all about me and, more power to me and my ego that I've managed to take this action. And it's not really, is it? It's not really that. I don't think it's that. It's not just that.
I love that. Or it that and that perspective can be so comforting for some people, because it also means that we're never doing it alone. Like, even though, you know, we ultimately are the ones that have to cross the river, if it's a co-creation with spirit, we're not doing it alone or with the universe. I love that. Thank you. Deva.
Yeah, I love all of these, the devotion. And then I also feel like it's following through with the commitments and the contracts that we come into our lives with, so that we're really able to advance our souls in this lifetime and leave a legacy in whatever way that is. However, our, you know, footprint, soul print on the planet is, that it's really such an amazing opportunity to come into this human life. So
beautiful. I love how some of you are bringing in just these, even these much bigger contexts around it. Yes. And Anita.
For me, it means like having ownership around this. It's like I'm being a real grown up, and with my clients, it feels like I can respect them as grown-up people. Mm-hmm. And this is so important to me because I see for myself and also for many other people who seem to be grown-ups that they are still in the role of a child often. Yes. And
yes.
Yes, and I can see that through these, wow, it's like we can allow people to step into a role of grown up and yes, empower them.
So beautiful and so spot on. And this relates to, it's so interesting because it relates to what I wanted to share next, which is, to remind everybody back to in energetics too, we looked at how we bring forward ideal mother archetype and ideal father archetype and ideal sibling archetype. And what I wanted to remind everyone is, as we bring forward those archetypes when it comes to accountability, to make sure, number one, that we're bringing the ideal, right? Not these make it about me or for me. And then what Anita's sharing, I love, because it's like, as we bring all those different archetypal energies, we can bring ideal mother, ideal father, ideal parent, ideal teacher, and at the same time, see our client as completely grown up and responsible. The two live together. And oh my gosh, as I just have to say, as I'm saying that out loud, I'm like, and I need to do that with my teenage daughter as well. I don't always see her as responsible. Grown up enough when she doesn't do her thing. Okay, so thank you. I just got something really important for myself from that. All right, we're going to keep on going. Veska, I see your hand up, but I want to go a little bit more and then I'll open up for shares again. Okay. As we all know, but I just want to remind us, with accountability, as with everything else that we support our clients on, we want to be conscious of our filters, right? So you might be a get it done person, but your client isn't, right? So your idea of what accountability looks like might be very different than what your client's idea of accountability looks like. So we want to just really be aware of all of that. We already mentioned, we want to also be aware of the pacing, the natural pacing, the consistent doers versus the deep thinkers and processors versus the tipping pointers. You know, we looked at all of those a couple modules back. All right, let me ask you all some questions. On a scale of 1 to 5, how accountable are you to your goals when you have outside help? And you can break this down into different categories, like maybe you're more accountable in your business than you are in your self-care, for example, right? A scale of 1 to 5, when you've got help, outside help, how accountable are you to your goals and your action taking? 5 is like you get it all done. 1 is not at all. Next question, same question, but without outside help. So when you're doing it on your own, how accountable are you? 1 to 5. Next question. Growing up, how were you held accountable to homework, to cleaning up, to practicing an instrument, to sharing? So growing up, how were you held accountable? By parents, by guardians, by teachers, by clergy members? Like for me, I played piano for many years and my mom bought that, you know, those timers back, you know, 30 plus years, tick, 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 tick. And I always, whenever she wasn't looking, I would just put it back down to 0. Like I had done, like all of, you know, I had moved through all the minutes when I hadn't, right? But what are some ways that you were held accountable? And think about also the 4, you know, the parent, did your parents say things that made it feel like it was for them? Maybe there were rewards involved for things. See what you can remember. And the next question, when you think about the ways that you were held accountable, what worked for you and what didn't work for you? What are some things that worked, that were helpful, and what didn't work? Sarah's saying good times, good memories, actually. Mom coming into the living room, dropping a huge pile of freshly washed laundry in front of us and threatening to turn off Lost in Space. I remember that show, if it wasn't all folded by the next commercial. All right, here's another question. Whoever was holding you accountable, could you feel their motivations in it? what were their motivations and how did it feel? What was the feeling of it? Deva, like to be incentivized. Nikki says, if we all pitched in on the Saturday chores, we got to do fun stuff together as a family. All right. Two more questions. These are both complete the sentence questions. Being accountable feels like. Being accountable feels like. Take one more moment with that. Being accountable feels like. And then here's one more. I am willing to be accountable, even if it's uncomfortable, when. I'll put that in the chat. It's a little bit of a mouthful. I'm willing to be accountable, even if it's uncomfortable, when. Okay, let's pause here. I'd love to hear a voice-to-voice share or two on what you're seeing through these questions. What's feeling important to you? What are you noticing? Nikki.
I'm noticing that if I think back to when I was younger, being accountable for my study and my homework, I didn't have, my parents never bothered me about it. It was my goals, my ambitions. But now that I'm a grown-up, being accountable for sometimes in my corporate client world feels like a whole bunch of pain and pressure.
What do you think the difference is? I feel like there's something really important there for you.
Yeah, I think because it's not my highest joy that I'm working for them. But like, if I look at like my university degree and, you know, leaving the town I grew up in and doing those things, having my adventures, moving to London from Australia, that was my highest joy. Yeah. But actually feeling overly accountable for someone else's stuff, and actually I'm making a bunch of people feel bad sometimes, not intentionally, of course, but because of whatever the transformation or change is, that doesn't feel very joyful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you've heard me say this so many times. I know it's not fun to see. And at the same time, I'm so glad this is coming up, because now that you're seeing it, you can start to think about what are your choices here? How can you make it more joyful? How can you take, and you might want to resist this question, but I'll toss it for you to like marinate on. How can you set it up so that you're not taking as much responsibility for them, right? So I think that this is bringing up some things that can actually has the potential to make your work more joyful and more empowering for your clients.
And it's probably why the Change Tribe is currently being born.
I just got chills when you said that. Yeah, feels like there's something big there. Good. Good. Angie.
Yeah, this exercise really highlights and enhances for me how much my people-pleasing tendencies come in, because as a child, I think I was connecting the dots that if it was something I didn't care about, like practicing piano, frankly, like my mom could nag me till she was blue in the face and I didn't care. But if it was something that like, there was a part of me that was really interested in it, then my motivation was like not disappointing her or not failing, and making sure that I was the best flautist and that I was the best at this or whatever. And then now I was just thinking about the work that I recently got to do with Inbal as part of this program, and how she really was able to light a fire under me in ways that like I wanted to be the star student. Like I wanted to constantly show up and have all my homework done and go above and beyond. And, but when it's just me, my pace is slower. I need more time. I don't honor it very well. I nag myself and I judge myself the way that like I got nagged as a kid. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really interesting to me. I think it's a lot for me to unpack there, but then just the awareness that I would want to bring to my clients and my own filters of not making them want to do something for me.
That's right.
Yes. I think that could be something that's really important for me to watch.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing that forward. There's the difference between making them do it for you or having their people-pleasing tendencies come up versus, I love the phrase that you use, lighting a fire underneath them, right? We are part of the process as practitioners for sure. And we get to light those fires with permission and all of that. But that can be done without it then being about us. Good. Okay, good. So let's keep on going then. And I want to we've already started kind of looking at tools and structures, but now I want to look a little bit more in a focused way on tools and structures for accountability. And as always, I've put things into more than one bucket. So first, we're going to look at a bunch of accountability tools and structures preemptively, meaning before there's been no breach of accountability. And then we'll look at tools and structures once action has not been taken. So in terms of preemptively kind of baking in accountability tools and structures, we want to be thinking about what motivates accountability, right? So for human beings, in healthy ways, right? In aligned ways, not in those people-pleasing ways or guilt ways or shame ways, But what motivates accountability? We've actually already looked at so many of these motivations so far in Sacred Depth. So I'm just going to review quickly so you can see how it applies here. Number one, desire and need, right? If there is a deep desire or a deep need, that is going to help promote accountability. So asking a client questions, even in that visioning stage, or when they're putting together a plan towards a goal, why is this important for you? What will happen for you if you accomplish this? What makes you happiest when you think about accomplishing this? Why is this a priority for you, right? And then if you also take into account your client's values, and that can be baked into making sure that the desire and the need is there. So to take Nikki's share, for example, if I know that for a client, feeling joyful is going to be important for them. When we're visioning, I'm going to ask a question like, how is this joyful for you? Or what will be joyful about the process of taking action on this? Right? So we want to make sure that the desire and the need, including some values, are part of the goal and the action taking, the strategies. Another thing that motivates accountability is, for lack of a better word, pain. And I don't mean like guilt and shame pain. We're not doing that. But I mean the pain of it not having the thing that you really want, right? So asking questions like, what will things be like if you don't move forward on this? What will you be missing out on if you don't accomplish this? Why do you feel done with not taking action on this? Make sense so far? Yeah. Okay. Another thing that motivates accountability is celebration, right? And what I mean by that is confidence and celebration from strength to strength, right? If we feel capable, if we know that we have the resources needed to take the action to accomplish the goals, that's more motivating than when we focus on our weaknesses, right? So everything we've learned about celebration, supporting clients to know their strengths and their resources, know that they have access to it, that can help promote accountability. Because when we feel like we can't, we're less likely to try. What are the resources you have available in order to get this done? Why is this the perfect goal for you right now? Why do you know that you can do this? Also, knowing what resources are available can be resources outside of them. What will make this easier for you? Right? That kind of thing. Here's another thing that motivates accountability. Clarity on the task and the process. Clarity on the task and the process. What specific action will you take this week? Is there anything about that specific action that you have questions on or that you would like for us to brainstorm on? Are you clear on how to do that action? Would it be helpful to take out your calendar and schedule in when you'll do that action? Okay. Another thing we want to think about preemptively is for accountability is that things might get in their way. And if it's the unspoken, if it's unspoken that obstacles might get in the way, then they may not even try to take the action, right? So asking preemptively, what might get in your way as you go to take this action this week? Where has this maybe fallen apart before? And what can you do differently this time? What will you do if you go into resistance this week when it's time to take the actions? So I almost always when I'm strategizing and a client is committing to themselves to certain actions, I'll just say lightheartedly, okay, and what's going to get in your way? Let's talk about it right now, right? Let's strategize for that. Here's something else that really motivates accountability for a lot of people. Knowing that someone else cares and is invested with you, i.e. your coach or practitioner, right? Again, because I care and because I'm invested in it with you doesn't mean you're doing it for me or that it's about me. There's a difference there, right? But I care. I believe in you. I really want this for you because you want this for yourself. And I'm invested in this with you, not just because you're paying me money to be invested, but because I am excited for you. And I want this for you if you want this for you. Does that make sense? So all the different ways that we let our clients know that we care, that we're invested, that we're with there, you know, for them. I often ask clients at the end of a session when, you know, they're going to do X, Y, and Z, will you keep me posted? I want to hear how it goes. I'm going to be thinking about you. I'm going to be sending you love. I'm going to be sending you good wishes. If you find that you said you were going to do it on Monday and it's Tuesday and, you know, maybe you, for whatever reason you didn't do it, I really want to hear from you. I'll help you get back on track. It's no big deal. Just let me know, right? If I know it's a particularly stretchy action for a client, I might say, is it okay if I check in with you on Wednesday and see how things are going? So really having our clients know that we are there with them can oftentimes make such a difference. And then the other thing to think about preemptively is, does my client have the physical energy, the time and space, the support from loved ones around them in order to take this action? We already learned about this in strategizing, setting the foundations, right? Making sure that the environment is there, but I just want to remind you about all of that again. Don't underestimate this. The importance of how much time will you need in order to take these actions? How can you create this time? Who in your family needs to be on board with this? What energy level will be required for this? How can you create the environment for that? Right. So thinking about those pieces. All right, let me pause there. There's still a couple pieces in the preemptive bucket, but I know I just went through a lot. Desires and needs, pain, celebration and believing that you can and that it's doable, clarity on the task and the process, understanding what might get in the way, knowing that someone else cares and is invested, and then the physical energy, time, and space. What is feeling important? What are you seeing, or what questions do you have on those pieces? Lisa.
Quickie. Would you ask a client what motivates them in terms of accountability?
Absolutely. What motivates you? What helps you? A lot of the questions that I asked for all, right? Like those can all come into play, but what supports you in accountability? The last time you went to do something stretchy, what really made a difference for you in being able to follow through on your goals? What would you like from me? How can I support you to be accountable in your goals? So asking any of those pieces and having an exploration of that can be really useful.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Vesica.
I want to just add something that you were sharing that was that's really given me a lot of insight about the celebrations, which I love. And the accountability or the motivation to do something, that in neuroscience, it's been shown now that each time we celebrate along the journey versus the end result, that there is serotonin that gets, like there's a serotonin uptake, which actually is the chemical in our brain that actually helps us to take action.
I love that. That makes perfect sense.
And also to say that is that so many people we've been programmed to celebrate the end result, especially men, that their serotonin has been messed with, right? So there has to be like this healing of the serotonin. So if us as a woman have been in that area, we might want to look at how we can maybe do some fasting or something to help with resetting the serotonin levels.
Oh, that's so interesting. I love that. Yes. And what Vesica is saying is just another reminder back to when we learn celebrations to be celebrating along the way. Nothing, I always like to say, nothing is too big or too small for a celebration, inner or outer, right? And also, you know, it then just also brings forward a reminder of this other piece that usually progress is made in small but mighty baby steps, right? And so we want to celebrate those baby steps. Great. A couple of other things to just preemptively be thinking about accountability. Are you baking it even into your sales call process, right? Letting people know I'm not doing it for you, et cetera. Like Lisa said, asking, not even in a session, you know, what helps with accountability or how would you like, but asking it in a welcome packet, you know, what works best for you. I use pre-call forms, as you all know, with my clients, not all of them fill them out. But there's something about, for the people that do use the pre-call forms, they're like, oh, I'm going to have to fill out this form before the session. And so I want to get the action steps done before the session, right? I mean, it's not foolproof, but it can really help. I've heard from clients many times that they've procrastinated on taking the action. And then, you know, right before they have to fill out the pre-call form, they take the action so that they can put it on the pre-call form that they did it. And then the other thing I want to remind everybody of as well that can help preemptively is also when you're strategizing with a client and you're looking at action steps, sometimes acknowledging that it's difficult, right? It's not going to be easy peasy to take that particular action step or to start that meditation practice or to stop going to bed so late. The power of acknowledging that it will be difficult and also, I know that you can do this. Okay, so that's all preemptive. Then the second bucket is when there's kind of been non-action, what can you do to support accountability then? So first of all, we've already learned so many ways, working with fears, working with rewiring thought patterns, looking at the wheel of self-sabotage, looking at perfection, looking at resistance, right? All of those pieces. But then on top of that, here's some other things to be thinking about. If a client, you know, doesn't take action or doesn't take action a couple weeks in a row, you might want to ask if the action or the goal is still aligned for them, right? They might not be taking action because there's something misaligned. The desire and the need maybe has shifted. This is very obvious, but sometimes we forget. Sometimes it's asking, why didn't you get it done? It's not always a deep obstacle, like a fear or a resistance. Sometimes it's I didn't know how to do it. I thought I knew how, and then I realized I actually didn't have the steps, right? Sometimes it's just an easy tweak if we can support a client to actually clarify why they didn't get it done. They might come into a session beating themselves up because they didn't get it done and feeling like, oh my gosh, it's a big thing. Sometimes when we ask that question, it's like, oh wait, hold on a second. I actually needed more childcare so that I could have the space to do that. Ah, okay. So how can you get more childcare, right? Does it not necessarily a massive fear of visibility or abandonment or whatever it is? Here's a question that can oftentimes be really powerful. It's a yes or no question. Do you want to adjust the task? Do you want to adjust the task? It's powerful for two reasons. Number one, because if the task is too big or not quite the right thing or like a little misaligned, then it gives the client permission, even though you strategized it out, you're going to do the video in this way and it, this, that, and the other thing, right? It gives them permission to change their mind and to do it differently. Or maybe you consulted on it and it gives them permission, more permission them to do it different than how it's been consulted. That's if the answer to the question is a yes, right? Do you want to adjust the task? But the other reason why the do you want to adjust the task question can be a powerful one is they might find their no in that, which is motivating for them. Like, no, I really want to take this task. I'm going to recommit to it for this week. Okay. How tight of a container would you like for me to hold? So do you need, and again, this is related to preemptive, but we may want to look at it again if action isn't taken. Would it make sense for me to check in? Sometimes if a client is committing to like a lot of things and they're big and stretchy and I'm not meeting with them for 2 weeks, I'll say, you know, for the next 2 weeks, would it make sense on Mondays for you to let me know everything that you want to do each of those weeks? And then Fridays, let me know that you've done it. Do you want me to connect in, right? What would be helpful? How tight of a container would you like me to hold? Deva.
I love all of this. And I also feel like with some of my people, it would be like, oh my God, I just created a whole nother monster of a workload for myself. And I want to still be generous with my time, but I guess my boundary flag comes up of how to not invite in the needy one.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a couple of pieces in this. Number one, there's a difference between the needy one and a targeted moment where a tighter container can really support, right? So needy one is because there's a fear of I'm not going to be able to get it done by myself and I need you, versus this tighter container is not about forever and all the time. This tighter container is for a week or two, because sometimes when a new habit or a stretchy action, like when it's new, it just needs a little more protecting, and a little more holding. So knowing, number one, knowing the difference between those two things. And then from there, never offer anything unless you have it to give and you desire to give, right? So if it's like, to put it in my terms, because you all know, like if it's a week before Art of Client Transformation, I'm not going to ask any client if I can hold a tighter container for them. That's going to be a recipe for disaster and disappointment for the both of us, right? Or a moment where I have like a lot going on. But that being said, if I know that I can give it over that week, and it feels good, and I know it's not a crutch, but it's almost like an extra kind of like watering of a new seed so that it can sprout, that's the right moment for it. How does that land for you?
That's so spot on. I was actually in the garden all morning putting little seeds in and watering, and exactly, it's like that vulnerable moment where let them get their roots and then they're, yeah, ready to go on their own. Thanks. Yeah, that really helps.
Good. Great question. Sometimes the adjusting of the task also, I just want to say, is to break it down into smaller steps. Maybe a client was going to go write their homepage for their website. And actually, what is more doable and less overwhelming is to write the first paragraph or the first section of that page. A couple of other things I wanna, yeah, Vesica, go ahead. You there, Vesica?
Oh yeah, I'm over here asking the question.
Oh, I couldn't hear you. Go ahead.
No, because I had myself on mute. So I'm sure that you actually covered this in strategizing, but I'm going to ask again. So say, for example, you have somebody, because I'm thinking of like somebody who might be working on their accountability or their part. And you, like you said, you just break it down into smaller tasks for somebody. How do you know, or how would you work somebody up to be successful in their accountability when they may not have the idea or know how long something should take because it's something new that they haven't done before? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So the answer to that is kind of a convergence of a couple different things. Number one, if you have wisdom on it or expertise on it, that's something that you can consult on, like offer that information. So for example, sometimes when somebody goes to create a preview call, you know, they might think it takes an hour, but I know that it really takes like 5, 6, 7 hours of prep the first time, especially when you do it to create something like that. So I can consult on that and share my expertise. So it's the convergence of the expertise, if you have an expertise in that action step, with one of the things we looked at in strategizing is I always invite someone, if they think it's going to take an hour, to add contingency time onto that. So if you think it's going to take an hour, give yourself an hour and a half, for example. So always pad in a little more time than you think. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Good question. Okay, couple other pieces to think about that can help. For some clients, having an accountability buddy is just can change everything. And sometimes they know someone who they can become their accountability partner. I have at times paired different private client. I mean, in group programs, we like in advance, you can opt advanced step, you can opt in to have an accountability buddy if you want one. So I in some group programs, that's just baked in. I have that baked in, or I have also paired different private clients who don't even know each other up, who both are looking for accountability partners who I think would be a good match. That's something that I've done as well. Or people are like, oh, I have a friend that I could do that with, or this, that, and the other thing. But having someone that you can meet with either once a week or meet with in order to get a task done or check in. And I will give instructions on how those accountability check-ins should go, because or else they just become like check-in conversations that aren't necessarily valuable for getting things done. And for some people, an accountability partner is the worst idea in the world. Like I'm the kind of person who I know I'm a lone wolf. I'm not going to do that. But for some people, it's revolutionary for them. Another thing just to think about, giving different ideas every now and again, if I know a client needs like a super, they really need hand holding to get something done for the first time, because it's like a new thing, etc., I will suggest or give them the option for us to actually do it together during session time. And at first, for some clients, they might be like, oh, but I'm wasting my session time on coaching. But if it's for some people, having that space and that support and that really tight container to do something once can start to establish their foundation to get it done on their own. So for example, about a year ago, I had a client who kept on saying she wanted to start a newsletter to her email community, and it just wasn't happening. Like she said it 3 sessions in a row, and it just wasn't happening. And so we took a session and I was there with her and I said, okay, if you are going to write for the next 10 minutes, what are you going to write on to start the newsletter? And she told me, and I said, great, I'm hanging out for 10 minutes. Let me know if you get stuck or how it goes. And she wrote, and then she wrote some more, and then she wrote some more. And she got her first newsletter article complete on that call. She asked me for some help on some things. I was there. And then that was it, right? She just was off running after that first newsletter article and has been sending consistently since then. So every now and again, it can be so incredibly valuable. In some of the group programs that I lead, we have get it done sessions, group get it done sessions baked in, because I know accountability is a thing. So for example, in Curriculum Lab, some of you all know, in addition to the training calls and Q&A time, we have separate sessions that's just about getting, as a group, getting the curriculum done. I don't lead those. Inval on my team leads those. And you know, that she's there to hold the space, to help them set up the task. And we make it educational too. And, you know, because I can't do anything that's not introspective as well. People can ask her questions, you know, and people get so much done. I'm going to share a couple other things. Oh, actually, we're almost at time, so I better quick share those things. Rewards. So Deva put it in the chat, incentive for some people. Not that we're going to give them the reward, but how are you going to reward yourself? What are you going to do for yourself when you get this done? And finally, every now and again, if someone has been trying 2 or 3 weeks in a row and they're not doing it, the best thing to do is to invite them to not do the thing between now and the next time you meet, to take a break from trying to make the commitment happen, to get lax about it. Sometimes actually like loosening things up and giving permission to not do something can create incentive to do it. All right. Hopefully we'll have time for a question or two. I want to hear some takeaways. If you're working with a practice partner, your homework, your partner homework this week is to, whatever you're working on together, to integrate some of these accountability pieces into it. For everybody, a piece of homework is think about something that you haven't been committing to that you want to. Design an accountability plan for yourself this week. Play with that. What would an accountability plan look like for you? And then in your client work, see where you can bake some of these pieces in. All right, in our last couple of minutes, I'd love to hear what you're taking from our call today, what's feeling important, and I was about to say, are there any questions? But I see there are some in the chat. Can I share more about how I set up accountability partners between one-on-one clients? What are the rules? Anita, I'm going to drop in the member center for everyone. I have typed out instructions for accountability partners, one-on-one accountability partners, and I'll just share that I give to my clients, and I will share that with all of you so that you have it. Let me just make a note on that. Julie's saying, I've just had a client resign and I've offered and agreed to do the work, intuitive eating recording together with her for accountability. Nice, good. Anyone want to have the last word voice to voice? What are you taking from our call today? Kelly.
Hi, I'm sorry I came on a little late, but I'm like soaking up the last half hour of this and just listening in again and also recognizing I'm in a different place around supporting with accountability. I just feel like I'm tapping into a number of pieces here and how loving it can be. I really love this idea of giving permission to not. And it's, I do have a question, but I don't know if we should wait till after you say goodbye.
Is it relevant to?
It's totally relevant.
Yeah. Whoever needs to go can go. We're I don't want to hold anyone over time, but absolutely go ahead and ask the question.
Yeah. So it's related to a similar thing with a client of mine who has been with me for a long time, and you've heard me mention her before, and she's in a very wintry phase right now. And when she's in a summer phase, she is the most productive and capable person I have ever met, literally. And then when she's in a wintry phase, she's feeling really low and like everything builds up and it's so hard to get things done. And I want to reiterate that she is working with like a psychiatrist. So she has like the mental health end covered, but we're working a lot on self-care and many of the other sort of spiritual deepening in pieces that we work with. And she has named that she doesn't even want to look at what she might be doing because then she goes into this shame spiral. And so we've been really focusing on like looking at celebration. And I've been sort of building in the practice of celebration into our calls and asking her to take that home with her. And she's gotten really good at it, but still like there are pieces, and there's even a session that I do where I send my clients off to do a medicine walk. And then we come back and we do ceremony, and she just hasn't done it. And I've offered that we could do it while she's on the call. And she has said, no, she doesn't want to do that. And so I'm just like, I really want to support her in this winter time. And so the idea that you said of just saying, why don't we take it off the agenda sparked for me. But I'm also wondering like, what else could I support with? And it may be like some of it, she's just wanting like shamanic healing during the session sometimes, and that's fine. But I'm we're advancing in the program and there are these pieces that are pending, and I have lots of ideas like we could just do a ceremony or a cord cutting or, you know, whatever ritual on the call. But I'm just wondering if you have ideas for when someone is really, really stuck in that place. It's not even, I don't even know if it's resistance, but.
Well, I mean, you said she's in a winter phase, and you said that a couple times, and perfect timing because we're going to get more into that soon in the next couple of weeks. But my sense from what you've shared is that it's actually about really honoring the season that she's in even more. So I know you already have been, but my sense is that it's honoring it even more so. Mm. You know? And during a winter phase, we are meant to do less and less. You know, even a medicine walk, which is about the inner work and all of that, that just might not, like her bare bones self right now, her like the trunk of her tree, like maybe that's a leaf that is not meant to be there during winter, right? So supporting her to really honor the season that she's in and find the value and the meaning in that season and in the honoring of the less, that's probably where I would go based on what you've shared. Does that resonate?
Yeah, it does. And she just wrote a book. She finished a book when she was in summer a few months ago about really the honoring of these seasons. And it's amazing. And so it's like sitting right now waiting to be published, but I just this morning we had a session and I was thinking, what if we did a ceremony honoring winter, like just having that be the ceremony rather than even looking at the medicine walk and actually just coming into relationship of honoring of winter. So that totally resonates. And I really appreciate you just reflecting that back. That's really helpful. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Great question. All right, everyone, I'm sending you lots of love, thinking about you. And we are not, are we meeting next week? Hold on. Maybe we are. No, we're not meeting next week. I thought so. I'm going to New York with my daughter this weekend. I'm leading a shadow retreat most of next week. So I'll be thinking of all of you in that shadow work. And I will see you all in 2 weeks. Sending lots of love.
Thank you so much. Have a great time in New York.
Thank you.